Well, hi again, everybody, and welcome back to Life's Learning Curve, the podcast. This is Season 2, Episode 37. I'm your host, former educator, and current media producer, Paul Hart. Hi. Find us, Life's Learning Curve, at our website.
Among a lot of other places.
Life'sLearningCurve.org. And please subscribe, because we'd love to have you. I am particularly happy that you're listening today, and here's why. In our two seasons, our two-year run here so far, our purpose has been to use storytelling to help us find and kind of pin down the best person we could be, how we got there through life experiences. We've told stories that have ranged from like just months after being born to just a few years ago. On today's episode called Found Value 2020, as in the year 2020, it's a different show than a lot of the other podcasts we've done. The past 10 months have left many of us postponed, locked down, quarantined, left out, and we've been ID'd as either non-essential or essential workers in our careers.
You, non-essential.
That right there is a psychological evaluation in the making, my friends. So let's join our guest, Heidi Hart, in a few minutes, and me as we weed through some of the best parts of arguably one of the worst years in U.S. history. Coming up, Sebastian.
Life's Learning Curve. I'm Paul Hart. Episode Found Value 2020. Stand by.
And we are back with Heidi Hart. Sounds familiar? Yeah. Well, Heidi's my daughter. Yeah, and if you can't tell, look at this. Huh? All right, we kind of look alike, kind of we do. Anyway, it's the holiday season, and she's stopped by. She doesn't live here. She lives in?
I live in Georgetown, Texas.
And you used to live in?
Kansas City, Missouri.
That's right. Before that, Champaign-Urbana, and you've been everywhere. So
yeah.
I'm going to call Heidi today. I'm going to call her a traveler, a blogger. Obviously, she's in the workforce. And your age, and I should know?
I am 27 years old.
I'm so sorry. 27 years old, you're going to be 28. Heidi, tell everybody a little bit about what you're doing these days with your job.
I am a consultant, I guess would be the more like broad title, but to drill it down a little bit, I work for a electronic medical record company that's based out of Kansas City. It's fine, Cerner Corporation.
Good company.
Yeah, I've been there almost exactly 4 years, a little bit over 4 years, which seems like so long. But I work specifically for an organization within Cerner that deals with smaller rural critical access hospitals. So we're talking like 25 beds or less. And I really like it. It means I don't have to travel every single week. And I work specifically with pharmacists and pharmacy technicians. So I know a lot about medication interactions and brand names and stuff.
So what did you get your master's in?
So I got my master's in public health, which really has nothing to do with what I'm doing right now, which is kind of funny. And I do find myself, especially during the pandemic, looking at a lot of things and thinking about, wow, I learned a lot about this when I was getting my master's in public health. Everything from policies to things shutting down to implementing, you know, mask mandates, that has to do with public health. Even the epidemiologists that are doing the study of the spread of this virus and creation of vaccines, that's all public health. When I graduated, it was 2016, and that was a really, really bad year for public health grant defunding.
Oh, so nothing really had happened for such a long time.
Yeah, it was also, not that this matters too much, but it was an election year.
Political.
Possibly. It was a little, I mean, not saying that any one person had anything to do with it, but it was an election year. There was just a lot of uncertainty where the future of public health was going. So I graduated at a real unfortunate time. However, I still wanted to work in health, and going to Cerner allowed me to do just that. And there's a lot of autonomy in my job. So I'm working on like a public health, we call it like a plus one in my job right now. So trying to bring just awareness to these small rural communities that we go to.
Life's learning curve.
When I sat down and decided what I wanted this podcast to be about, I decided, well, it's never going to be about current affairs or anything that has to do with anything current, but because there's been a whole lot that has gone down in the past 10 months or so, I do want to talk a little bit about COVID, but your take on certain things because of your background. And you mm-hmm. do have this educated background in health, public mm-hmm. health. I can't tell you the amount of times I called you on the phone and said, Heidi, blah, blah, blah about this. Should I be doing this or that? And it's really cool when your daughter is telling you, well, you got to do this or that. I'll never forget the phone call when you called me on the phone and said, Daddy, you're in the age range. You got to stay home. Do you remember doing that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Have I done okay?
Yeah, you've done good.
Okay.
You've stayed home.
I did stay home. I stayed home an awful lot. So even today, almost a year later, we're not really sure.
We still haven't left the house. No.
Well, exactly. Yeah.
I haven't left this studio.
Yeah. I've been down here.
He actually lives here.
I'm pasty white and just sitting down here.
Where were you when COVID-19 broke?
I was watching the news and I heard that there was this virus and it was critical and it was very intense. And I was out of the state at the time and I had great concerns about getting home without trying to panic everybody. And it did turn out to be the last week everyone traveled.
So March, early March.
First week of March. Where were you and what were you doing when you first kind of put this together?
Yeah, so I guess I'll start with probably the same week that you were in Florida trying to get home. Mm-hmm. I was also out of state. I was on a work trip and COVID was very much a well-known thing, but I don't think anybody kind of could gauge the seriousness of it yet. Mm-hmm. So it had entered the States. People were talking about it every day on the news. I left for a work trip, flew from Austin to Denver on Monday. And Tuesday, we are, in our hotel rooms about to leave for our first day on site at the hospital. And this is so funny to think back on, there were like 6 cases in the state of Colorado confirmed. And they were freaking out about it. And I knew it was going to be a big deal just because of my background. This is a new virus. This is a new pandemic. They already had decided this was going to be a pandemic. When we left the hospital that day, at the end of the day,
yeah,
there were then 16 cases of COVID confirmed in Colorado.
Fast spreader.
It was very fast. And it's kind of funny because the season finale of The Bachelor was on that night. So all the girls were like in one room and we were trying to watch The Bachelor and all of a sudden it was like breaking news and we're like, no, put The Bachelor back on. We were so mad. But what it was President Trump getting on air to declare a state of emergency. And then the state of Colorado is a state of emergency. And there were a lot of people in the room that I was in saying, oh my gosh, it's only 16 cases. And I was like, guys, but tomorrow it's going to be 32. And the day after that, it's going to be 64.
Oh,
and the
gosh.
Day after that,
times 2 every day.
Yeah. I was like, think about it. Like, this is like best analogy I saw was if you have a bunch of like mouse traps all set up next to each other and you mm-hmm. drop one ping pong ball, it's going to set one mouse trap off. But when it jumps, it's going to start setting all the ones right outside of it off, and then it just creates a domino effect. That was a really good social distancing ad, because if you spread them 6 feet apart, it's not gonna set as many off. But that's where I
first was. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Heidi and her mousetrap analogy of the pandemic right there.
So that's where I was, and what it came down to was Thursday. Yeah. We were flying home.
Okay.
Thursday, it became extremely apparent that this was not good. This wasn't just like, oh, there's 32 cases, state of emergency. Like, for God's sakes, Tom Hanks got diagnosed with it, and we were, mm-hmm. that's when we were like, oh gosh, no, keep Betty White Hanks? Safe. Keep Betty White safe, everybody. Where is she in the world? Someone keep her safe.
Our elder celebrities, we have to save them.
But I had a flight home, 10 p.m., and I remember getting through airport security in 5 minutes, getting standby on a 5 p.m. flight, and just I wanted to get home as fast as I could.
You're right.
I was supposed to travel the next week, and I've traveled maybe 3 times since then because of the seriousness of the pandemic.
It's been about 10 months since then.
Yeah.
Back in school, back when you're getting your master's, and you had very intensive learning and some training about pandemics. What type of things did they talk about back then?
Every 100 years, there's some sort of serious pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
So there was one in, I want to say, like 1818. That was, I'm going to completely say it wrong. Some sort of flu. The year you were born, 1818.
Yeah, right, right.
So there was some sort of flu. I should know this, but, you know, back then there's no airplanes to take people places. There's no, you know, fast food that's open.
Spreading was more confined.
Yeah. 1918, there was another pandemic. So when I was in my classes in 2015, 2016, they were like, you guys think about it. Like, it's going to happen within the next couple of years. And you know, people say stuff like that all the time. We thought the world was going to end in 2011, 2012.
Right. Yeah.
That didn't happen. But there was a show on Netflix called Pandemic in early 2020. And it was like, there is going to be a pandemic this year. We just don't know what it is.
Yeah, so over they didn't shoot it before.
Yes, it was. And it covers a lot of things. But the big thing that I was taught is not that, you know, pandemics are the problem. It's that there's a lot of people that, in for lighter terms, just think it's a bunch of hooey.
Mm-hmm.
And
watch your language.
That's
yeah, I'm sorry.
That's the reason that it spreads, and that's the reason that it gets as serious as it is. So I know there's a lot of people that don't believe in wearing masks and think that they're not doing anything. And there's a great analogy I have for that too, if you want me to dive into that. But even if you don't believe they do anything, just, and if it doesn't make you happy, wear them when you walk into restaurants. You know, you can take it off at the table. Wear it when you walk into Walmart. If you live in a state that's cold, just think of it as it's keeping your face warm. That's the best thing I've learned when I've been visiting home. I'm like, I kind of like this. It's keeping my face warm. Yeah, unfortunately, nowadays, we have planes. It makes it very easy to travel. There's fast food. There's restaurants that are staying open because I get people need to make business. I don't think that everything should necessarily shut down, but I think that there's a lot of people that just believe it's fake, and that was kind of what we were preached in grad school.
Do you think there was this amount of denial to the disease back in 1918 after World War I?
People did kind of what they were told back then.
Yeah.
There was a lot less pushback of, you know, government mandates. Women back then were already staying home.
Yeah.
So for them, it really wasn't any sort of pushback. For men, I get it was probably a little bit harder.
Yeah.
But because they, you know, they were the money makers. They were the breadwinners back in that time frame. And so they had to go to work. But I do think that there was a lot more compliance with policies and mandates back then.
COVID postpones wedding.
You, last August, were to be married.
Yes, I was supposed to get married.
Now it was canceled. How did you make that decision, and what was that whole thing like for you?
Oh, yeah, it was very stressful to make the decision. Once we made the decision, we knew it was the right move. So we weren't, like, that upset about it. We weren't in a position where we, like, needed to get married for financial reasons or anything.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was very, it's so weird because you never think you're going to face that. Like, oh, I'm just trying to get married and there's a global pandemic. But
yeah,
when this all started in March, I had a friend that was supposed to be married April 4th.
Okay.
And She ended up, you know, very quickly, unfortunately, having to make that decision, you know, with weeks to go. I mean, like 3 weeks to go, everything was planned and I'm sure food had been ordered and all that stuff.
Sure, there's a lot of prep for that.
And they told everyone that they were postponing their wedding to July 4th because they didn't, I mean, no one knew.
Right.
It was just, you know, if you have a wedding coming up, postpone it. Because I remember talking to her and saying, I feel so sorry for you. Like, I can't believe you have to go through this. I couldn't imagine having to do this with my own wedding. I don't know where I thought the virus was going to go. Was it just going to disintegrate into thin air? I don't know what I thought was going to happen, but I did expect it to be more under control than it was.
Mm-hmm.
And there were many nights where I would wake up so stressed out because I would go back and forth every single day between, no, we're good. You know what? We're good. We can have this. And then the next day it would be like, there is no way that I can have this wedding. This is not safe, especially the state of Illinois.
Yeah.
We reached out to all of our vendors and our venue just to kind of inquire about like what our options were. If we were having to push it to 2022, 2023, we probably would look into just eloping, to be quite honest.
What? They eloping? No, I'm just
kidding. Yeah, but we weren't going to wait. We weren't going to wait 4 years is kind of how we saw it. And they were like, we have one date left in 2021 and it's in June. So we were like, all
that's
right,
beautiful.
If we wait literally one more day, we might not get that date. So we, you know, contacted very close
family.
It's on
a Thursday, but that's okay. Is it on Thursday?
No, it's on a Saturday.
Okay. It's on a Wednesday. Yeah.
We made the decision to postpone it. And once we did it, all the stress kind of just went away because we didn't have to feel that guilt of possibly getting somebody sick at the wedding. And now June 2021 might not be okay either.
Right.
To be quite honest, but we are still going to go through with it on that day. We might just have to cut the guest list.
How did you deal with your postponed wedding?
Yeah. So how I dealt with it, lot of drinking. Lot of drinking.
I would have done comfort food.
Lot of crying.
Yeah.
And ultimately, just knowing that we made the right decision, I think, was what kind of eased my mind at the end of the day.
So during the time of the lockdown, the early days, what we thought it was going to be a couple weeks, we don't come out of the house and that type of thing. So what kind of things did you and Trace do to fill that void during lockdown?
We, so both of us are very lucky that we didn't lose our jobs.
Yeah.
We both were felt very secure. So I actually have been working remote, had been working remote already for a little over a year when this lockdown went into effect.
Right.
So the rest of my company had to work from home with like a day's notice. It was like, take all your stuff home.
Yeah.
And now we are remote until May of 2021. So the hardest was the weekends, because during the weekdays, I still had my job to do. I still worked from home. I just wasn't like traveling for work. I think the hardest thing for me was adjusting to my events being remote and over a computer instead of like physically flying out to the client site and working face to face and getting that like face to face relationship with your own clients. So I had to learn extremely quickly how to be just as effective over a headset and like sharing my screen. The hardest thing, I think, like I said before, for me and Trace were the weekends. Trace used to work at a whiskey bar downtown, and with him being,
that was his fun job.
That was his fun job.
Yeah. Trace likes to keep busy.
He likes to keep very, he needs to keep busy or else he bothers me. Just pokes me. What are you doing? What are you doing? What are you doing? Go find another fun job, please.
Let's get a pet.
But so his weekend, he decided, you know, well, the bar shut down for a little bit, but he also decided not to go back to the bar because he works directly sometimes with COVID patients. And so just that wasn't a safe place for him to be working. It still isn't. And he misses it, but for the weekends it completely freed us up, and it was just around the time when the weather's getting nice. We can't go visit our friends, go to like rooftop bars, go to restaurants. So we We watched a lot of Netflix. We keep finding shows to watch. I know that's not the message you should be sending, but we took a lot of long walks. We've both pursued different hobbies, and they've really taken up a lot of our time. So that's been good.
Yeah.
And honestly, it's just been kind of enjoying each other's company.
The authentic you.
But then there's that, what am I doing? You start looking around and going, and that's when, you know, I feel you kind of almost truly find the real you again, is when you've got some free time here, and okay, I can fill my day with television or the internet, but I also could, I don't want to be hokey, but learn something.
COVID activities.
Trace and I are both a part of this community called Camp Gladiator.
Okay.
It originated in Texas.
Do you have to drink Kool-Aid?
No.
Camp Gladiator.
It does sound, it's not culty, I promise.
Oh, okay.
Okay. It's, we got introduced to it. It's exactly what it sounds like. It's a camp. And you can see, so you have trainers in your area and you get to know them very well. And you can look on the app and you will essentially see what locations your trainers are at, what times of the day, what kind of week is it? Is it a cardio week? Is it an interval week? Is it strength and agility? So we had our kind of regimen every Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday mornings. Mm-hmm. We would wake up at, this was not my decision, 4:45 in the morning and go. They were all outdoor locations. Usually like church parking lots or elementary school parking lots.
And at that particular time, that was fine.
Yeah.
That was we were told that was fine to be outside.
Yep. You bring your own mat. And then very quickly, say like end of March, they were like, we can't have in-person classes anymore, but we can do Zoom. Yeah. So they took everything virtual. And it was so easy for me because not quite the same time. So like 4:45, thank God, was not available. But my trainer does a noon class. And so over my lunch break on Monday, Tuesday, and Thursdays, I go to Zoom classes and you see her and you can see everyone else on the screen. Yeah. And the only hard thing is you have to use the equipment you have in your house. So everybody on their own brings a yoga mat and like whatever weights of their choice.
You use like two cats, don't you?
Yeah, just two cats.
Two cats,
I use like 12 to 15 pound weights.
Okay.
But like, you know, in-person classes before the pandemic were fun because they'd have sandbags and tires to flip and group. So now they're back to doing group classes only outdoors and they limit the number of people. So you have to like sign up and say, I'm going to be there. And then it's a lot of accountability because if you don't sign up, you're taking the place of maybe somebody else that wanted to be there. But I was able to keep up my fitness regimen for that.
That's fantastic.
It was really, really good. And then honestly, just kind of challenging myself when I thought I was getting married in a few months, it was a really good way to be like, I gotta work out.
Gotta fit in that dress. Although you don't have the weight issues.
Yeah.
But you know, that's a good goal.
Yeah. And then once it, I mean, I think the hardest part too that people need to understand is there was a lot of pressure going into the pandemic and a lot of people putting pressure on other people to, you got to stay healthy, you got to stay fit, you got to keep your mind at ease, you got to develop a hobby. And I saw all of these things.
Say, you got to stay fit, you got.
There was a lot of finger pointing over over the Twitterverse. And I literally saw one person's tweet and it was like, if you don't come out of this pandemic with a new hobby, skill, or like learned language developed, you are officially lazy. And I was like, what a horrible thing to say to somebody who's experienced a trauma of a pandemic. Because I got very lucky. I didn't lose my job. I still had the drive to work out. But there are people that live alone, which I'm not saying that's depressing, but like if you don't have people around you, it's very hard for a lot of people to just sit with their thoughts all day. Trace, my fiance, is phenomenal with sitting with his thoughts and meditating all day. I sit in silence without my phone for about 30 seconds and I'm like, I can't live like this. I need some sort of stimulation in my life.
I can't live like this.
So to tell somebody that they have to develop a skill or else they're officially the laziest person is horrible.
I think I saw that too, and it really bothered me. It's and I couldn't awful. Tell you why, though.
It's because that's the societal pressure that people put on each other. You know, of course it's important to stay healthy, eat right, stay fit, keep your mind healthy. But if somebody doesn't want to work out, if someone doesn't want to go for a run, or maybe they can't. Maybe they are very scared about going for, maybe their knees are bad, maybe they have breathing issues. They don't need that extra pressure of feeling like they need to do something. So I got very good about kind of like practicing exactly what I'm preaching now. If I would wake up one morning and be like, I feel it's way more important for me to sleep in today than go on a morning run. I would sleep in. If I wanted a fancy coffee, I would go get myself a fancy coffee and not get like just have the black coffee that we have at home. Right. Not that that's bad and not that you should do that every day, but like I would try and like listen to what my body wanted. And if I knew I was having a bad day, I developed kind of a bad ritual where it's like, I completed a day's full of work. I'm going to treat myself. But
that's what I do all the time. It's horrible.
But I would just
mine's a daily thing, though.
Yeah. I
changed the channel.
I didn't want to get into like this obsessive behavior of like, I have to stay healthy and stay fit because this is what everyone is telling me I should do.
Right.
When I moved states away from all my friends, when I left Kansas City to move to Texas for Trace, I kind of knew that I was moving for him. And we didn't know anybody in the Georgetown, Texas area. I had a couple friends.
Very brave.
But I was ready for that. Like we had been long distance for so long, and I went back to, you know, visit my friends, and I have a couple friends in Austin. My best friend lives in San Antonio, so she's not very far from me. But it really wasn't that big of an adjustment because I had my best friend already living in my house with me. Yeah. So
working at home.
They completely took us off the road from traveling for a couple months. And then they've slowly eased us back into it with a lot of restrictions. You know, like you're getting COVID tested before you go. You get COVID tested when you come back.
Yeah.
Everyone wears masks on site. But the people who I would see roughly every single week when I'd travel, so some of my like best work friends, I haven't seen them for a year.
Wow.
And I mean, I talk to them every day on Skype. Mm-hmm. On ping, we call it pinging at work. If you want to, you know, talk to somebody, you send them a message and ping it. But anyways, these people who I talk to every single day and I used to see roughly every single week or every other week, it's so weird not having them just around me. Or there are fun places that we get to go for work. You know, we fly into big cities and then we drive to the rural areas. So we spend a day in Nashville before we would drive there.
You know?
Yeah. Right? So I have all these memories and I'm like, I can't believe it's been a year since we had a night in downtown Nashville. And I don't even know if we're going to do that again. Because there's been a lot of people that have left my company since then. And it's like, oh, dang, that was really fun. Like the four girls, you know, we went out in Seattle or Nashville. So that is a social aspect I miss, but it also was like an occupational thing, so I didn't really combine the two. But my work friends are all roughly my age, so it's very fun, and it's something that I haven't had in about a year.
It's really a shame that we don't know that we're in the good old days when we're in the good old days, because we're so busy living in the good old days from 10 years ago. And in other words, appreciating. So you go to work every day and you see the same people, or you see similar people. Hey, you have to go on road trips with people. And all of a sudden, if that's all taken away, it does matter.
Heidi's blog, cruisingattitude.squarespace.com.
One of the things you started doing, and this is before the pandemic, was you began to write a blog. Okay? When did you feel the urge that you had something you needed to get it out? And you're a writer.
It's really funny because going into the year 2019, a couple of us went out on New Year's, and we were going to do New Year's resolutions, mm-hmm. Or it was more of something you want to accomplish, but we did like one truthful thing and one lie, and everyone at the table had to guess which one was the truthful
your scallywag
goal of 2019 and which one was the lie.
Okay.
And so my lie was that I was going to start a blog. That was my lie.
Wow, you're really dangerous in your thoughts.
And my truthful goal was something I'm probably not going to do. I wanted to become like a fitness instructor.
Okay.
So we were then flying a couple months later somewhere, and it was an airport that I had frequented just from like a client I had been to so many times.
Yeah.
And we landed and I was like, this place is there if you want this. I'm telling Trace, like, Starbucks is here if you want this coffee, but they have a Paper Moon coffee here, which is also pretty good. And I'm just telling him everything that
you're
he was about to see.
Yeah.
And he was like, you should really start a travel blog. And I was like, I don't want to do that. Because like, I'm really not an expert in one field, even if other people think I am. I never wanted a blog to have the intention of being like a fashion blog, a beauty blog. I know nothing about those two topics in particular. Uh-huh. I'm not an influencer. I'm probably
a
bad influencer if someone's going to look at my stuff.
Well, that's why I am the way I am then.
I'm going to be like, just listen to your body, take a nap, drink wine when you want to. That's the type of influencer I'd be. So it would not be good. And I was just like, no, I'm not going to do that. Yeah. Like flat out told him that. And he's very aware that if there's lack of motivation, nobody's going to do something. You can't tell somebody to, you know, you really need to do this if they don't want to do it.
Yeah.
So I had a client in, it was almost a year ago, and it was a very, very challenging client. It was, I've come to terms with the fact that I probably could have gone to therapy after dealing with this client. Yeah. It was so much belittling, and anyways, there's no need to dive into that, but I was flying back and I had multiple flights and multiple long layovers to get back to where I lived. Mm-hmm. And in the airport, you know, I usually will open my laptop and start working. Mm-hmm. And that's just kind of what I do. I work a lot. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I don't want to work right now. I don't want anything to do with work. Yeah. So I opened up a blank Word document and I'm sitting in, I think it was actually O'Hare Airport. And I just started like typing up tips that I would want somebody to know about traveling. And it was about TSA pre-check, and it was about different food places to try and what happens when the lines are super long, what happens when you have a quick layover, is it worth it to get the we have like Diners Club memberships because of how often we travel. Is it worth it to purchase that if you even don't have a if you don't travel that often? So I just started typing. And then I realized, like, I almost had a blog
post. It came out fast, didn't
written.
It?
Yeah. And
that's when you know you've got something. When it just kind of, I call it, this is gross, but vomiting.
So fast. It was, like, 20 tips, and I limited it down to 5 to post a blog. Otherwise, nobody would read it. It would be so long.
In your blog, what's the best part of it to you, of writing it?
The best part of writing my blog, I believe, is just kind of rehashing a time in my life that obviously I felt was important enough to write about. So it's very therapeutic. I get to put all my thoughts and feelings out there and kind of reanalyze why I might have felt this way, why I didn't. Yeah. So really it's just therapeutic.
Good. I think this is therapeutic for me too.
Mm-hmm.
In so many ways. And when I first began podcasting, I really questioned, do I have any value here? Does this have a purpose? It's got a purpose. But it doesn't mean my purpose has to be somebody else's. Mm-hmm. And the first few shows I had guests on who I felt had value. And then after that, I kind of went off my own. Mm-hmm. And I'm kind of glad I did. I still have guests every once in a while. Like you. There you go. But anyway. Well, thank you for coming in today.
Yeah.
I appreciate your time.
Of course.
And because you're such a professional. So we'll do
social distance.
Hug.
Hug.
Thanks. See you next time.
See you next time.
So what's our takeaway for today? Fear of the unknown? That's how I see it anyway. Now, Heidi is a humanist, and she thrives on personal strengths and lots of friendships, and that's
a great idea. This is just what she does to be the best person she could be at this particular time. We're all different. I know that. We actually have seen some of the humanity and personal strengths within ourselves emerge because of this pandemic. All of us here at Life's Learning Curve, we know how fortunate we are to have one another. We will get through this. So thanks to our guest, Heidi Hart, for being here with us today and helping us through this unusual year. I wish all of you out there in the audience the best of health. For Life's Learning Curve, I'm Paul Hart.
Subscribe to Life's Learning Curve at lifeslearningcurve.org and leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or Podchaser.
Life's Learning Curve is produced by Paul Hart, technical director Heidi Cerner, supervising producers Sebastian T-Dog, John DiDonna, and Hunter Metzke, editor Paul Richards. Our audio mixer is always Riley Hart. On this episode, special thanks to our guest, Heidi Hart. Read Heidi's blog, cruisingattitude.squarespace.com. This podcast is meant for entertainment purposes only. Find our website at lifeslearningcurve.org. Help us grow and continue by liking us on Facebook and listen to us almost everywhere that you're listening now and practically everywhere else these days. Episode 37. From all the crew here at The Late Late Shift, I'm Paul Hart, and we will be back soon with more from Life's Learning Curve. We'll